Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Sissoko finally waited. Eriksen low, great ball into the middle. What a save by Heaton. Tonight's Davinson Sanchez, Lucas Moura, and belted into the net. Brilliant goal. On debut, Tunde Ondombele has scored the equaliser for Spurs. Lucas Moura clips it. Oh, great goal! Stephen Bergwijn has arrived in North London. That is absolutely incredible on debut. Aurier! What a finish for 3-2 from Serge Aurier.
First hand hit to Son. Kane. Good area for Spurs. And Kane's not afraid to shoot. Wow, what a goal, Harry Kane. That is exceptional. Lamella, who will try and place it. Wonderfully taken by Eric Lamella. Never afraid to take on a shot, and with good reason. Terry in the Burnley back line, and Son breaks forward. Oh, wow, what a run. Yunmin Son, from inside his own half, has scored one of the best goals of his Spurs career.
Yo, people, welcome back to another episode of the New Spurs Order. It's a bit of a mixed cast today. We've got some ever-presents, and we've got one new disgraceful face that we'll touch on in a second. But you know what? Let me go through the regulars, man. Yao, Scott Hall, what are you saying, man? What's good? How are you?
I'm doing well. I've taken my yearly hiatus from football. I'm just here to insult the club, really. I have to obviously meet my contractual obligations to Touchline and to the NSO. And so I'm here, and I'm here to hand my weekly insults, as I like to do.
Don't worry, trust me. You're gonna the topics we've got today, you're definitely gonna have your opportunity to have your bag of insults out, man. And listen, we'll get Booker T on in a second, but I feel like it would be shameful of me to not introduce that person I was talking on at the start. So, you know what? I'm going to let you introduce yourself, Hyrule, man. Talk to us. Let the listeners know who you are, just for their benefit, when it comes to the new Spurs order. Tell us a bit about yourself, mate.
Yeah, so my name is IAS. Some people refer to me as Hyrule, Kwesi. But, you know, really, in terms of football in circles, professional football in circles, I'm known as IAS.
No, you're not. You are not known as IAS.
I like yeah, I mean, I don't like to toot my own horn, but I'm often seen as a tactico, a visionary, and effectively, I guess, a scout, really. So
there's a lack of shame here, you know.
In terms of like my background and history, I'm one of the first people to have identified Gareth Bale back in 2010.
Oh my God, you are disgraceful.
As really as somebody that could go on and play in advanced positions. And dominate the league and dominate in world football. I identified Luis Suarez quite early as well, back in really around 2011. I've since obviously gone on to identify many other things that we'll talk about over the duration of the discussion, I'm sure. But yeah, man, I'm just a football lover. Unfortunate as to Spurs for my sins.
Why are you lying?
Many people Spurs, don't know that I have ties to Man United.
And Arsenal. And Arsenal.
I have a lot of respect for Arsenal. But I very much dislike them. And this Toby guy, for, I don't know, 2 years, has been talking about how I like to give Arsenal and Arteta the goat 3,000. All this crap.
Whoa.
Are you going to say pause after that?
Pause.
Wow.
That's what he's saying, isn't it? That's what he's been saying. But
yeah, but where's the point? Like, you got, there has to be a pause of me. Like, wow, dog. There was a lot of space between that.
But, you know, I've spoken quite a lot about, like, just footballing projects that I see as headed in the right direction, and that was one of them. Unfortunately, it was one of them. It's one that me and Toby have had some tensions and frictions over, but it is what it is. But yeah, man, I'm very pleased to finally be here. Thank you for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, we're pleased to have you, man. Oh, I mean, obviously, always. Your name, welcome, your name is IAS, but the fans don't know that you've got pending beside it in brackets. Because big man, so you know, take time, innit?
So, Haya, before let me introduce Tops first. So, Tops, aka Booker T, what are you saying, man? How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, bro. I'm good. Always good to be back on. It's been a minute, but yeah, man, I'm here.
Nice, man. And Haya, before we get into it, I think obviously you can go with IAS if you want. I'm not going to call you IAS. And if I am going to call you IAS, I'm going to call you I Am Skunked. I Am Scary.
When you say I Am Shady. That one kills me. I'm not going to lie.
but in case you ain't noticed, we've got a theme, yeah, where everyone has like a name associated with wrestling, of course, yeah. Like New World Order, etc., etc. So it's up to you if you want to go with the same theme. I think it would be desirable, but it's not mandatory, right?
Yeah.
You do as you please. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's cool. I grew up wrestling. I was obsessed with wrestling to the point that I wrote a full WWE Raw script for a whole entire episode when I was like 14.
Nah, you're taking the piss.
I sent it to my friend. He was like, "Send it to Vince McMahon. This is dope." Send it to Vince. he was older than me. He was mugging me off. He was just taking the piss, innit? But he was like, "Yeah, send it to Vince. Vince will love it. Like, and you might get this in turn into an episode." But I was obsessed. Who was I obsessed with? Do you know, it was my guy Kane, man. Kane just took over my whole life. So I might have to do a Kane thing. It might be a thing.
It sounds right.
And it makes sense.
Yeah, you're here for destruction and anarchy. Yeah, sounds about right.
It makes sense, man.
Yeah.
Kane and Kane.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay, you can go.
I said Eric Bischoff, but you know, that's a different day for a different story here.
You know what? Before we actually get into the agenda, let me actually bring in our guests as well. So for those who are listening, I've just added Andre Ginola to the stream, aka the son of David Ginola. Andre, man, how are you doing, man? You okay? Can you hear me, for starters? Can you hear me? You there? Is he there? Is he frozen?
My screen right now.
I think he's frozen. Well, Andre's going to join us in the stream when he gets his mic and his camera sorted. But until he does, I'll remove him out of it. And listen, let's just get straight into the agenda, because we spent a lot of time socializing, but we can't put off Spurs forever. So we're going to have to talk about Tottenham for once, actually. So let's talk, because in Spurs' most recent game, we ended up with a win, 3 points. And even more surprisingly, we ended up with a clean sheet. Now, I know we all watched the game and it was a very, very scary performance that did nothing to quell any sort of any sort of doubts on this team's capabilities of getting top four. But Booker T, I'm going to come to you first, man. Give me your assessment of the actual game, because there was a lot of talk afterwards as well. Conte obviously put his Instagram post and everyone's like, oh no, he does care about the club. Spurs are back on winning ways, 3 points up top four. What was your take on that game, the result, and what it means for our season?
What was my take on the game? Beforehand, honestly, I had nothing really positive to really say on the team. I would actually say that, you know, and I really don't say this lightly, we were going into that game relegation form. Six out of the previous 10 losses. In those 10 games, 21 goals conceded. Mixed performances, first and second half. So to be honest with you, against what I don't think is an amazing Fulham side, but it's a side that seemed to be somewhat in form, I thought London derby, I really do not know which kind of Tottenham will turn up. And to be honest with you, for the first half an hour, I wasn't moved at all. We started the game very hesitant. They seemed to realise that they could get a lot of chances by creating crossing opportunities into Mitrovic. So they really bombarded our box with crosses, which, to be fair, Romero, Davies and Dyer seemed to deal with fairly well. Didn't really seem that there was much synergy in our pivot. And obviously, up top, outside of Kane, we weren't really creating anything on the right for Kulu, and obviously we weren't keeping the ball with our current left winger. So it was a real difficult half, to be honest with you. But there were moments that we did get on the ball, and when we did, in the latter part of the half, we did seem to create and get ourselves back into the game. And, you know, like Kane has been doing this season, managed to create a goal almost from nothing, to be honest with you. A very, very good goal, to be honest, that I think he basically worked for himself. And to be honest with you, he has done this season for us, you know, scoring his 266th goal, his 16th this season in 21, 18 in all competitions. Second half was cagey. There were lots of little things that I kind of saw from our performance that I was kind of happy with, and some things that I wasn't happy with. But in the end, we managed to keep the clean sheet in a London derby and piss off back to North London. So, yeah, not amazing, but not shit either.
Fair. Yao, I'm going to give you your first opportunity to cuss some mofos. Emerson Royale, he popped up with a goal against Man City, put in a relatively decent performance by Emerson standards, and then followed it up with another decent performance. And I, some of our fans, like clockwork, it's Emerson, two good games. Maybe he should start, switch to a back four, play him right back. What is your response to the supposed Emerson remontada, please?
Delete him. That's it. Just delete the guy. That's all I got for you. That's all I got for you. Delete him. Yeah?
Okay.
Delete you. But like let me even add to that a little bit. Yeah. Let's think about this. We've had this guy for what? How long have we had him now? 2 seasons? So this will be his second season, yeah? In full. We've had it for 2 seasons. I see what Golgi has said. And he can't make his way to the top of the stairs because right now he should already be at Seven Sisters. Like this guy shouldn't even be present anywhere near this freaking stadium. Here's the problem we have. We have too many fans that, for whatever reason it is, and I can't tell you why, yeah, but all it takes in this Spurs team is for somebody to have a half-decent game. I think a lot of our fans have, they've struggled. Yo, big man, I'm not going to lie to you, from this point on, what I'm about to say, people, if your ears are open, if this relates to you, don't come after me, because this is going to be some very hot stuff. I think a lot of our fans are mediocre. They're mid. They're mid in everything they do in their life. They don't choose to excel to the heights of what they want to do. And therefore, when they look at our players, even the mid ones, if the mid ones give them just something, that's enough to quench the love in their heart for Spurs. But I am not one of those fans. I aim for the highest of the highs. Did I choose to support Spurs? Yes, I did. Was that a bad decision? 1,000,000%. Can it turn around? Of course it can. Does that affect me as a man? Freaking achieving what I need to do in life? No, because I'm the greatest Yao walking this bloody earth. But all the mediocre sons of twats that support Spurs and sit there and think, oh, you just need to put your face into it. You just need to run and show him a little bit like this. You need to show him to the bar line. I need every single one of you fans to recognize this face. It's violent season from this point on. If you see me in the stadium, don't talk to me about football, because you, man, don't know what you're talking about. I'm on real immense crud from this day forth. Emerson, Højbjerg, Dyer, Davis, Drunken Master Lloris, Broken Son, none of these men can survive past this summer. Not a single one of these bastards can survive past this summer. And there is one kid that I'm specially holding back all my rage for. He has been a suspect for 2 years and is yet to see jail. He has yet to be convicted for his damn crimes. But this man will go to jail eventually this summer. If this club does not get rid of Sessegnon, the violence I'm going to let loose in that stadium is going to be unimaginable. I will boo this guy from the immediate entrance of this stadium to I leave. He has to absolutely disappear off the face of this planet. This club have pushed me to the edge, people. I do not deserve such disgrace in my life. I've hit nothing but heights in my life, in my career, and in my family life. But when it comes to sports, this club has insulted every bloody fiber in my bone. And now I have to deal with my days arguing amongst my brothers as to how we're going to fix something that is unfixable. And that is my take on Tottenham stinking Hotspurs.
Okay. Fair.
Do you know what? I'm
not going to argue against any of that.
Do you know what, Tobes? Can I say something, actually?
Of course, bro.
Do you know what's funny, right? I watched the game on Monday and I wasn't particularly impressed. And then I went into the timeline and I saw a lot of Emerson prop. And in my head, I was like, what am I seeing? What are people talking about? Like, I don't see this performance that they're talking about. Like, fine, he scored against Man City. And I thought he did okay. So this morning, I come back from work. put on Spurs Play, watch the whole game again. And to be honest with you, I actually thought he was okay. Like, do you know what's funny? There was something that I thought was quite interesting as well. So I'm not sure why, but there were lots of times on Monday that he was finding himself almost drifting in quite centrally as a wing back. Like almost in a way that, you know, that the way Zinchenko and Walker do for like their respective teams. So okay, just stay with me on this point, all right? Yeah. There were moments where I was like, why is he staying in field? And it was weird because I was thinking, you're not a midfielder and you're not really offering us anything as an attacker. But what I did find that there were a lot of moments that it seemed like it was giving Kulu so much free space to operate on that right-hand side where he doesn't feel like he has to come infield because of Emerson on the flanks. And actually, sometimes I think I was thinking the more and more I was watching, especially in that first half and moments of the second half, I was like, this is actually kind of working because what it's doing, it's actually removing any sort of attacking threat or crossing aspect that Emerson has, because obviously he doesn't have it. It gives us, at moments when we were defending, another guy in that sort of, not central area, but it looked like it was, there were times when it looked like he was almost infield. And even as a right back, not as a right wing back, he's quite dogged. So actually the defensive side of his game, you can always kind of trust. And he genuinely is actually fairly defensively secure. Like, I mean, Fulham is the kind of game that you want him to perform in. And these are the games that I think he kind of does. And even little things like that, I was like, maybe Conte realises that this guy has his limitations. And by maybe even just, I don't know, like to me, it might even be such a small tweak, but it's enough to make me feel like, okay, maybe he's realising I need to just do what this guy is good at and not really ask him to do anything more than he needs to. Even for the goal that we scored, I think it was from the back of a corner and it came back to him and he was like on the left, but he was kind of like in the left central area. He received it, fed it infield to Son, and Son was on that sort of leftish channel of the box, fed it into Kane. Kane was able to score. So, like, I don't know. Like, I felt he did okay. Like, I'm not his biggest fan. I'm not his biggest fan. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just saying this, or maybe I'm reading into it more than it was. But it looked like to me that he wasn't really hugging. You know, that when we watch him, especially at home, he hugs that touchline and he forces Kulu infield. I just felt there were lots of moments in the game where he wasn't really on that touchline. He was actually kind of infield. And I thought maybe that kind of helped us a little bit in moments. Because obviously, like I said, we know he's defensively secure. We know that he's pretty dogged. But the aspect that we want him to be good at, the attacking aspect, the crossing aspect, he ain't going to do that for us.
I can't believe we've had like 10 minutes of Emerson chat. That's what I can't believe. But you know what? Multiple things can be true. And I do actually agree with pretty much what you said. Like, he did take up a role that he doesn't normally take up for Spurs, because we see him hanging wide and receiving the ball from wide positions. And yeah, like, he has had two games back to back where he's actually been defensively sound and hasn't been the usual liability he is, but on the ball, but he's just poor. And I think even a 10 out of 10 Emerson game is like a 4 or 5 out of 10 game that you expect from a fullback playing at a supposed top 6 club, right?
He's 2 out of 10. He's 10 out of 10. He's not Brazilian.
Let him.
He's from a nation that doesn't even play football. Find a nation wherever it is on the face of this planet. They don't play football. That's where Emerson's from. He's a fraud.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm going to bring in Andre now as well. I think he's here now. Can you hear us, Andre?
Yeah, I can hear you guys.
Ah, brilliant. Big up, man. Thanks for joining the pod.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. So Andre, we got Yao, a.k.a. Scott Hall. We got Tops, aka Booker T, and then we've got Heil to the right of you, aka Mars Kane. Sorry, aka I Am Scout. Yeah, I Am Skunked. Sorry, I Am Skunked. So listen, Kane, I'm gonna come to you first. Oh, I'm gonna come to you next. Sorry, and we need to talk about. I don't want to get into more detail about all the stuff that went wrong in the game. We all can agree that it was a pretty poor game of football. But I want to talk about Harry Kane. I want to talk about your best friend, you and Yao's best friend, because he hit a landmark. He hit a landmark. He went level with Jimmy Greaves for most goals scored for Spurs. And I know we've had the whole debate, world class, not world class. I have my view, you have your view. But what is your take on that achievement for Kane? Because I know you have mixed views on Harry in general, so I want to get your opinion on Harry's feet.
Me, yeah, like, you know, obviously I think we always have like a lot of back and forth in the groups that we're in, and or in the chats that we've had, sorry. And don't get me wrong, to be honest, on WhatsApp I like to stoke the flames a lot. But if we were to have like a kind of a settled discussion about Kane, like, Kane's one of my favorite ever football players, just like full stop, in terms of the, like, over the course of the period of time that I've been watching football, which is what, since like 6 or 7 years old. Harry Kane is certainly one of my favorite players. He is like a throwback to like a 90s or, you know, early 2000s. Player, he's the sort of player that you could have imagined, you know, in that era with your Van Nistelrooy's, your Henry's, your Shearer's. Like, he feels very much like that. But I think the black mark against his name is the trophy element. I don't think he ought to be satisfied as a player of the caliber that he is and possessing the quality that he has, with finishing his career even as like Premier League top goal scorer, never mind the Jimmy Greaves record. Like, I think even that wouldn't be satisfactory enough to be an adequate reflection of the ability that he does have. And like, you know, on top of that, if you add on top of that, like, elements like missing those really key big moments in those big, on those big occasions, like not passing it to Sterling in 2018, or like not playing well in the Champions League final in 2019, or missing the, you know, the kick to make it 2-2 in the France game in the most recent World Cup. It provides a stack of evidence for his detractors to say this guy isn't the guy when you need him to be the guy. So what do we have? Like, we don't have the trophies, and we don't have the big occasion goals or performances to suggest that he deserves to be elevated into the heights of and the realms that we would, you know, accord to Benzema or to even Lewandowski or Henry. Not because we don't think he's as good as a football player, but because he just doesn't have those moments. And regrettably, I think he does have to show a little bit more personal ambition. He does have to kind of push for a chance to, whether that's going to a Bayern Munich or, I know he tried it last summer with the Man City move and it didn't work out for him. And, you know, obviously, like, I'm saying this like unwillfully, because of course it would be a shame to see Kane not playing for Spurs anymore. But I think in terms of like what he's capable of versus what the club appears to be capable of, he probably needs to like muster up the courage to say, do you know what, like, forget this whole Premier League record thing. Like, I'm just going to go to Germany and get a Bundesliga quick, or like take over the mantle from Benzema. Benzema's like 34 now. Like, he can take over the mantle from Benzema or Madrid or, you know, somewhere. I don't think even, like, there's been a lot of talk about Man United potentially being interested in him. that to me doesn't strike me as a sensible move, because Man United are very much still in transition. They're not a team at this moment in time that are, that you would say they're guaranteed to win the big trophies.
Well, can I give you so, and after we have this convo, I'm going to bring Andre in on this as well, because like, can I give you a rebuttal then? Because the whole Kane point, you've made some compelling statements, but I think using Man United as an example, right? Do you not think that in the same way people sort of bash him for the lack of big moments would be the same thing people would say if he was to go to a Bayern and win a trophy that they always win without Harry Kane, or go to Man City? So like, using Man United as an example, would it not be more of a feat if he was to go to a club like Man United who are on a trajectory that we want Spurs to be at right now, with, in terms of a manager who looks like he's got project capabilities, right? And he looks like he's got them going upwards. And would it not make more sense for him to go there, back himself to be the MVP that takes Man United back to the summit? Do you not think that would be more respectable than him going to
work? It would be respectable, but whether that will happen or not is still for the gods. Like, it's still like very, you know, the likelihood of him going to Manchester City and winning trophies far exceeds the likelihood or probability of him going to Manchester United and winning trophies. Like, as compelling and as exciting as Erik ten Hag looks at this moment in time, I really like the cut of his jib. And I really like, I've said it, I grew up loving Man United, to be honest. I grew up as a Beckham fan. So that would make me happy to see if anybody else was to be successful other than Spurs. It would absolutely, for me, certainly be Man United. But they don't look like a club who can tell a player, we're going to win trophies. Guardiola can tell you that. In a way, as bad as Chelsea are right now, I feel like they can kind of tell you that as well. Like, they just have the capabilities to just spend so much damn money that even you'll even probably pick up an FA Cup here or there, or, you know, Chelsea look really bad now, but we are 2 years out of them winning the Champions League for the second time in 10 years. So,
yeah.
Like, I feel like there are more sensible options for someone like Kane, who is going to be 30 in July. You know, he's coming towards what you would imagine are the twilight years of his career. Don't get me wrong, of course, like, players are playing longer now, but Kane doesn't strike me as someone, I don't know, I could be proved to be very wrong, but he's looking leggier now than he was 2 or 3, 4 years ago. He doesn't strike me as someone that I feel is definitively going to have the longevity that, like, you know, that some of his peers have. So I think he needs to be winning the next couple of years. And there are only a few clubs that can really hold themselves that they can offer him that. I've been talking for a long time, but
no worries. I wanted to bring in Andre on this as well, because obviously Andre, Harry, before the Fulham game, right, the news broke with David Ornstein and Alistair Gold that Harry Kane is in discussion with the club, with a view to potentially sign a new deal at the end of the season, right? Yeah. Me personally, I'm probably one of the few that I don't know whether I'm in the minority or majority, but I'm quite skeptical of that news and the validity of the news. But what's your take on that news? Do you believe it, for starters? And Do you agree with Kane, Mars Kane? I can't get used to this shit. Mars Kane.
Just say IAS, bro. Don't worry, man.
For God's sake. Do you agree with I Am Scary that that Harry Kane is better off going to a club where he's guaranteed to win? Or do you feel like he should stay at Spurs or go to a club in England where it's sort of a harder challenge for him to win, but he takes that club potentially to glory?
Sorry, just before you answer that, like, I just want to caveat as well, like, I don't want to come across as like I'm trying to sell off Kane. Like, Kane is
no, you're not, don't worry, we're just having a discussion.
Also, there's also the potential for the club to be sold and for new ambitious owners to come in, and it's like, we can win in the next, you know, they'll say to Kane, we can win in the next couple of years, stay here and be the franchise player for, you know, finally arriving on that elusive trophy. So there's also that, I think, as an option as well. I know it sounds a bit far-fetched, but I'm just saying that.
No, I hear you. It's just a discussion. Don't worry. Go on, Andrew.
I'm okay with a couple of things he said. I mean, we've gotten to the point where we've got more at heart what Kane is going to do with his career than Tottenham at the moment, because he's...
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
He's grown to be favorite player of a lot of fans. And I feel like I would much rather have him have a good ending to his career in a bigger club than stay at Tottenham. So I'm more thinking of Kane as a player rather than as Tottenham as a fan. And it's tough to compare him to top strikers, in my opinion, because coming back to the Arsenal game, coming back to most big games, you feel like he desperately wants Tottenham to win every game, trophies, etc., etc. But you kind of feel like he walks into games and he almost feel like he knows the games he's coming into where the team is considered as underdogs. And almost as if he feels like he needs to do more than what he usually does. When you talk about players like Benzema and such, in big games, they fulfill their role. They play as a number nine. They play at striker. They are going to make some runs and help the team getting the ball back, coming back, defending. But something that I really noticed when I was at the Spurs game against Arsenal is that there's a couple times where he would be the one getting the ball back instead of defenders in his own half. The team would go on a counter-attack, but you definitely know that he won't be able to make that run to be there at the end and at the end of that counter-attack. And you feel like he's all over the place. He's trying to play in midfield. He's trying to defend. And sometimes you go forward and he's not there because he was in his own half making the run. So I feel like it's incredible what he's achieved, knowing the players he's had around him. That's why I said it's difficult to compare it to top strikers in top teams, because I don't feel like he's played with those players that provided him with great balls, game in and game out, and providing him with a lot more goal opportunities. So that's why I feel it's tough for me, because he obviously has some bad games, and in big games sometimes he does not show up, but maybe because he's doing a lot more than what he actually should do, you know. I don't know if sometimes, obviously, I'll make it clear, I think of what I want to say in English, I think of it in French, so sometimes it doesn't come out in English as perfect as it should. But so let me know if I didn't make myself clear enough. But coming back to the question, yeah, I think we've gotten to the point where I feel like he's better off. I would like to see him perform at a bigger club with bigger players around him, see what he could do in those circumstances. And yeah, that's my taking on Kane.
Fair. Do you know what? Yeah, it's not even a thing of like him. I think that it's like that a divorce needs to happen if the club are not to showcase the ambition that is commensurate with what can get Kane those trophies. And the divorce needs to happen for everyone. It needs to happen for Spurs fans. It needs to happen for Kane, and it needs to happen for the club at large, because I think Kane is also like emblematic of an era. And like, the longer you hold on to Kane, the longer you're holding up. Like, you've got Kane, right? And then like, kind of, you know, as the nucleus, and then all of the sort of like atoms around him are the residue of the Pochettino era that everybody hates, like flipping Hugo Lloris or Ben Davis or whoever else, people I'm not mentioning, Son now, who's underperforming, of course. Eric Dier, of course, like probably the clearest example. Davinson Sanchez, like there is too much of a representation of that team that died a slow death in that final year of Poch. And I feel like if you kind of take Kane out of that, it also allows for a replenishing to happen. Like, hopefully, you know, Spurs are able to get a big wad of cash, also remove some of those other, like, you know, I was going to say cancerous objects, but it's like hyperbolic. But like, some of those other players that are stinking up the club right now and are contributing to some of the worst performances that the club has seen in many years. So in a way, like, the longer Spurs hold on to Kane, I feel like, it's counterproductive, you know. Yeah. The club needs to undergo a bit of that painful rebuild that Pochettino was always going on about. I think it probably requires Kane to be part of that in terms of leaving.
Here's my thing on the Kane thing, and this would be probably the only and last thing I'll say on. I 100% disagree with every single person that has ever said that he deserves trophies. No single player, not a single player playing football today deserves trophies. When your time comes in a situation, whether it be a final or, you know, chasing a lead, you have to turn up. And if at the end of it you get a trophy, well done. If you don't, sometimes it might be unlucky, sometimes you just didn't turn up. In the best years that Kane's had at Spurs, in the best team under Poch, he wasn't carrying the team. There was other players that were contributing or doing just as much as he was in that little short time that we were considered a good team. So players like Eriksen, Dembele, Jan Vertonghen, Ali even, Son coming off the bench, Toby, Lloris was sober for once in his life. But now, over the last maybe 3 to 4 seasons, you can say that, all right, yes, he's had to do far more than what he was doing previously in terms of contribution to the team. But in those good years, or the good years up until probably that Champions League season, that Champions League run, which was a bunch of up and downs all through that season. Up until that point, we'd been to 2 finals. Unfortunately, he didn't turn up in either of those finals. We make it to the Champions League final again. Coming off an injury, hadn't played for 30 days, didn't turn up. Fine. Been to a final with England. After 25 minutes, Italy dealt with him. That's life. Best performance for England, probably in our time, was just this World Cup gone. I thought he was fantastic against France. Unfortunate with the second penalty. Like, there's too much in his career where I'm like, nah. He's had opportunities. It just hasn't gone well for him. That's life. That's the way I look at it. He's had opportunity. It hasn't gone well for him. I don't want to hear fans say, oh, he deserves a move to Bayern Munich and, you know, win a trophy there. I'm not trying to hear none of that crap. I'm not trying to hear none of it. Because for me, even if he goes Bayern and let's say he wins the league, they win the league without him anyway. Yeah, he would have to go there. In order for me to be like, yeah, you know what? Everybody was right. He is definitely world-class and all that kind of stuff. He would have to go to Bayern and, like, be their best player. And that's like, as much as people think, oh, yeah, Kane Spurs is best player, that's not a guarantee at Bayern.
But do you not, like, so let's... No. So this will be my last point on this as well, but my rebuttal to the whole... does he deserve, etc., etc. I think you can make a case for that. Like, yeah, you can speak on the finals, right? they're big moments, but we're talking about like 5-6 games.
No player deserves anything.
But yeah, let me finish my point. So what I'm saying is, when you look at his performance, even if you don't, fair enough, let's take away the word deserve. But when you look at his performance as a player individually, since he burst onto the scene for Spurs and on the international stage for England, his performances are befitting of a player who we've seen go on to do better things at Spurs. Players of Harry Kane's ilk at Spurs over the years have gone on to play for better clubs. It's not a thing that's specific to Harry Kane. When you have a player that is as big an outlier as Kane is for the club, they normally go on for bigger moves. 2005, when Michael Carrick was by far and away our best midfielder, where did he go? Man United. Luka Modric, where did he go? Real Madrid. Where did Gareth Bale go? Real Madrid. Where did Sol Campbell, where did he go? Arsenal, right? Where did Teddy Sheringham go? Man United. There's so many other players.
That's a very valid point. However, there's a big, big issue with all of that. You can go through all those previous Spurs teams. Maybe the only one that might be closest to where Kane is right now is the Gareth Bale team, the Gareth Bale Modric team that made the Champions League in 2010 with Van der Vaart, Crouch, Pavlyuchenko. That's the closest. No other team that you mentioned. Carrick finished fifth with Spurs. Yeah, and we weren't even considered to be going into that season one of the top five teams. We weren't that. Kane burst into the scene. That first season, or half a season, if you want to call it that, under Sherwood.
Full season.
No, it was half a season. I'm talking about Sherwood when Sherwood brought him in. Half a season.
Okay.
You know, you can be like, all right, cool. This kid, you know, he has something to him. Poch didn't start him. I can't even remember who Poch started. It might have been Soldado. Jesus Christ, what have
we Adebayor. Done
again, Adebayor, you know, that's life, innit? But he was scoring in the Europa, finally gets his chance, blows through, pause, does his thing, yeah? And the following season, if I'm correct, is the season in which we were trying to chase down Leicester City. It happens. We finish third after the whole season's done. All right. Now we're moving in the right direction. Following season after that, we finish second. You can go through all the previous teams, iterations of Spurs. There's been no other teams outside of the Poch era that have even been consistently in the top four. None. So if the best player or the heir to being the best player has wanted to leave, it's made perfect sense. Even in Kane's case right now, in people saying, oh, he deserves to leave. Spurs finished fourth last season. Don't ask me how. Yeah, but we did. Like, his actual career at Spurs, he's played more time in the Champions League or in Europe at the very least than Sol Campbell did ever for Spurs. Than Bale did ever for Spurs. Than any other name that you're going
to
mention.
But so, I do think Toby's point is a salient one, though. Like,
he's got the record to prove it.
What you're basically
I'm too harsh in the sense of, you know, everybody wants to be nice because of what he's given us. He's given us great moments. That is fantastic. He's given us 200+ goals. That's also
fantastic. What it is? It's just a thing of like,
but I'm not here for the whole he deserves something.
Every player that Toby mentioned has, and to be honest, much of this is Kane's own problem anyway. To his detriment is his own loyalty in that he
exactly.
But also exactly. It also has to be caveated with the fact that Kane was part of the most promising generation of Spurs player that existed, like Modric, Bale, so on and so forth. Those guys were never on the cusp, or never felt like they were on the cusp of actually...
They weren't even in teams close to what Kane... Listen, when you actually look at the best Spurs team in the last 20 years, because I know we're going to move from this, but when you actually look at the best Spurs team of the last 20 years, and you actually go through the list of players, yeah, you're probably going to pluck Carrick from here. Berbatov from there, if anything. Bale from there. Modric from there. And then that whole back line, maybe outside one or two players, but that back line is going to be Lloris, Toby, Jan, Walker, and arguably Rose.
I think it serves Toby's point though, but is what I was saying in that, like, sorry to like to keep on it because I know we want to move on agenda wise, but basically, like, because Kane was part of that generation, it's more conducive to that loyalty. Like, if he was from a previous generation where Modric and Bell, where it's like, okay, this is a bit of a fad, we're in the top four, but it's not gonna last. You're going to push for a move because it's like there's better opportunities on offer. But Pochettino had cultivated a group that felt like, do you know what, if we stick this out and if we actually add to this team, hopefully the owners back this team to a degree, as we were talking about the other night, this could be something. And I, Kane, a lot, you know, grew up in the Spurs Academy, Spurs fan, can be the, you know, the hero, the epicenter of that. I can be the spearhead for taking Spurs back to the 60s, you know?
And that's why he stayed.
Yeah, and that's why he stayed. So I don't, in a way, like, as much as you can hold it against him,
he's a narcissist.
I don't think it's
narcissistic. He's Lex Luger.
I don't think that's narcissistic. I think that's like, it's honorable and commendable.
Admirable. Look at the Nigerian and Ghanaian together. Okay,
Listen. We're gonna move. My last point on this is it's admirable because you don't see that in football nowadays. You don't see that in football. We can bash him for his lack of finals, etc. But it's only It's only at Spurs where players like Kane and even Son. I remember the season before that they get bashed for being loyal. That do you know how crazy that is? They get hammered for being loyal.
No, they get hammered by other fans.
No. They get hammered. They get hammered by Spurs fans for being loyal. That is mad to me.
I have no problems with these men being loyal. That's where I think people get wrong.
I don't think the whole deserving thing is
correct.
No. Even if you don't agree with it, I don't agree entirely with all of your points, but there's rationale behind what you're saying. There is. And there is rationale for why people say he deserves to go on because he signed a contract, a death row contract, when he didn't need to. He did not need to sign that contract in 2018. Spurs had played one season away from their home of 120 odd years, Wembley, right? Building a new stadium, no money coming in. He didn't need to sign that new deal. He signed that new deal. He said, "I'm staying." He did that. Pochettino did the same thing that summer again. Son, the season before, right? Spurs were in turmoil. He didn't need to sign that new deal. He signed it. This is going to be my point is finished now. So I don't think you can get onto fans because I'm definitely one of those fans who are saying, I think he does deserve a move away because you've given the club like some of your best years. You've tried. Fair enough. You may not have gone over the finishing line, but you've tried and you've actually been our best ever since this guy broke onto the scene at Spurs. He's been our best player. He's been our best player. So there's a big part of me that absolutely wants this guy to do well in his career. And if that means leaving Spurs and going on to win trophies elsewhere, so be it.
Let me get this right. Correct me if I'm wrong. He signs the contract, a year removed from when we left the stadium, right?
Yep.
Where did we finish that season? Top four?
Third.
Finished third. Yeah. So a year removed from the stadium. When we left the stadium, we'd gone undefeated. Yeah. We weren't in no turmoil. I don't want people to believe that when he signed this contract,
we were in turmoil.
Okay. But we weren't in no turmoil. When he signed that contract, whether it was a long-term contract or not, yeah, a death row contract, which it's turned out to be, of course, yeah. When he signed that contract, there was no turmoil. We were in a good position. What we did with that has happened to be where it is. But a year after that, or in that same season, after he signed the contract, we made the Champions League final. So there's a lot of caveats. All I'm saying is this. You are a player of this caliber. Have you won something? No. Could you still win something? Yes. Is that a likelihood? It's up in the air. If he stays with Spurs and he wins a trophy, he's probably thinking of it from a legacy point of view. And this is quite narcissistic. And he has every right to think of it like this. Because if he wins any trophy that's bigger than the Carabao Cup, he will earn more respect across his entire career for doing it with Spurs than anywhere else. He goes Bayern, probably Man United might actually be the closest move he could get, yeah, to be getting that same kind of respect. Because if he goes City, he goes Bayern or Real Madrid, well, he could go to any of those clubs, to be honest with you. But if he goes there and he's carried, or and I mean this in the nicest way possible, like he's taken to a trophy and he chips in, people are always going to hold an asterisk against him. So if he decides to stay, which I'll be honest with you, I'm happy for the train Kane to move on. I actually am. Like, I'm done with pretty much 100% of the Poch era. I'm done with it completely. I don't even want Poch to come back to the club. I'm done with it completely. Yeah. But if he stays, I don't want Spurs to run this guy, which is the one, this is the one part where I'm really going to defend Kane. I don't want Spurs to do what Spurs are going to do, which is run this guy into the ground. He's already gasping for air. And we are about to cut all his last bits of oxygen. Because that, ladies and gentlemen, is what Tottenham Hotspurs does. Piece of crap club. I can't believe I freaking put my freaking loyalty to this club. I could have supported Real Madrid. I could have done that.
We're not going to let you go on another rant. We know how you feel about this team. We do have a tendency to run players into the ground. And I think ultimately the one thing we can all agree on is Spurs have consistently shown that they don't know when to let go. They don't know when to let go and start afresh. And I think that's something that they need to learn quickly, right? But let's move on, right? Speaking of letting go and moving on, let's talk about the January transfer window, right? Because Spurs have actually signed a player this week, right? We're on day 27 of January. Spurs signed a player on the 26th. I'm going to come to you on this, Booker T, because I ain't heard much of you. So Spurs signed Danjuma. Arnaud Danjuma, fellow Nigerian brother like me and you.
Yeah.
What's your take on this signing?
What's my take on the signing? Like I've said in our group, I'm not going to lie to you. When I look at everything, doesn't really make sense to me. Doesn't really make sense to me, purely because we already have a left winger. We already have someone who basically can deputise as a left winger. In Richarlison. What's interesting is that Richarlison was supposed to be the deputy for Kane, basically hasn't even done that. We have Kulu on the right. We have Hill, who is probably deputising for him. So then you're now looking at a player you're taking on loan who is going to be the deputy to the deputy. First of all, as a loan, I'm not against it. I'm not against it. If it's a six-month thing where we can see what his qualities are, go for it. This is a 25-year-old player who is probably coming into his early peak of his career, having played, you know, in Belgium, having played very decently when he was in the Championship for Bournemouth, and then moving on to Villarreal. I mean, to be honest with you, he hasn't done crazily badly. You know, if we're talking about his numbers, I think 2021, 17 goals, 7 assists. The season after that at Bournemouth, he had a very good season, 16 goals, 4 assists. And this season, he's only played around 800 minutes for Villarreal. And he's even managed to get 6 goals, in which he was integral in beating or helping Villarreal beat Juventus, integral in helping them beat Bayern Munich. I mean, I'm not against it. I feel like right now, Son stinks, and I'm not going to go into that anymore, but Son stinks. So the idea of having someone who is quite versatile, that can play kind of maybe across the front line, I feel like he can play as like a winger, as like a 7 or as like an 11 or even possibly as a 9. I can't really see him as like a 10, but anywhere across that front line, and he does offer something which I think we are currently missing. We used to see it in Son, his ability to dribble, one-on-one skills, and his ability to get in behind. Danjuma looks quick, looks like his touch is good, because right now Son's first touch is absolutely crazy, and he's got an eye for goal. Son's on 4 goals. Benton has 4 goals. Højbjerg this season has 4 goals. Trossard has 6 goals. Gross has 6 goals. Like, some of the men that in the league that have more goals than this guy. Like, if I speak on Son, I don't even want to get into it. But
please speak on him.
But Danjuma, I don't see why we did it, but I also kind of want. I also kind of can see why we did it, and because it's a loan, I'm not horribly against it. My only issue with it, from a bigger sort of picture, is that it's not a priority area that we need. But I'm not gonna say no at this point.
Andre, I'm gonna come to you on this as well because I actually agree with Tops. I think I see it as a pointless signing, but I like Danjuma. I think he's a good player. I just don't really see how this is a need for Spurs in January. But like Top says, if he comes in and he hits the ground running and he actually gives Conte a positive headache, then yeah, great, happy days. But I want to talk more about the profile of Danjuma because, okay, granted, he's not a player that we had in mind or we need when you look at the defence. But what do you think of the profile player? Because Spurs surely have lacked someone like Danjuma over the years. Because a lot of Spurs fans have always said over the years that Spurs don't have a dribbler. Like, we don't have a winger who can just take the ball and just beat players. Like, what's your take on his profile?
I mean, I'm not I kind of like the idea of a loan because you know the player's coming in. If he gets some minutes and he gets to play, obviously I would like to believe that the guy is going to try and give 100-150% because he's here to prove that he's got the quality and he's good enough to play at that level. So maybe it'd be a good opportunity to maybe bench Son after a couple games as well. I feel like coming into Richarlison signing at the club, obviously his style of play, I was pretty excited. So I've learned since Pochettino to not be overexcited about skillful dribbling players because I just feel like since Poch, we haven't really had a manager that's been able to bring the best out of those type of players that have come in. And that's the only thing I'm worried about is that I've seen a couple of his games. I'm not going to lie. I haven't seen him play an awful lot. But I'm always worried that he's going to come in and he's going to be facing someone that's not going to be able to bring the best out of him. And we won't get to see his full potential. So that's pretty much kind of how I feel every time we bring someone in at the moment, to be honest.
Interesting.
You see what we've done to Andre? You see what we've done to Andre? You see what this club has done? Listen, Andre, say the word. Say the word. I will go and strangle Daniel Levy just for you. Just for you. See what this club has done to him? He said he doesn't even believe. He doesn't even believe in signings.
I was at the game against Marseille in Marseille. And obviously Conte had got that red card the game before, so he was watching the game from the stands, and I was sat 2 rows behind him. So I was pretty close to him all game. And before the game, we were with a couple players from Marseille. I was with my dad. He was talking to a couple players as well, played at same period, same time as him. And so 20 minutes before the game, we go into like this kind of private corporate boxes, you know, private area. And just around the corner, I see a couple chairs, a couch, and I take a glimpse and I see Daniel Levy with Antonio Conte. And I go over to my dad. I tell them they're just sat right there if he wants to go over. So he goes over, says hi. Says hi to Daniel Levy, says hi to Conte. Conte gets up and he looks at him, and we spoke about it with my dad after. He looks at him and my dad had to say, great to meet you, David Ginola. And he was like, he didn't even realize, he didn't even realize at that moment who he had in front of him. And my dad came back to me and he said, I looked in his eyes and I just, he said, can I swear?
Yeah, of course. Free world.
He was like, fuck, I would never want to be in his situation and his place right now. Because he said, the look in his eyes, his face, everything just made me feel like, I just felt his misery, you know? Like, he was really miserable.
Mate.
And he was like, I felt so sorry for him. And during the game, right in front of Conte was sat Donnarumma. Am I pronouncing it right?
Yeah.
And
I know you're talking about.
And his assistant on the sideline started protesting, and he got a yellow card. And I remember her turning back to Conte and giving him like this crazy look, like, you already got a red card last week, 2 weeks ago. If your assistant manager on the sideline gets another red card, it's not going to go down so well for you. And, you know, you just feel like the guy's under so much pressure. And, like, I just, for my dad to come back to me and say that, I was like, because obviously it's my club. And I kind of felt what he meant, because I was there and I watched him go over to him. I watched him say hi. And he was like, I feel like this guy's in jail. It's terrible.
Nah, you know, mate, what? Yeah. I'm not gonna lie to you, Andre. That's one of them stories you had to keep to yourselves. Because now I'm definitely beelining. Hey, lads, I'm renewing my season ticket. I'm coming. The main job for me to do is get to Daniel Levy. I just have to. This guy has to go. He has to go from tomorrow. Yeah. What? How can a man have a look? Look at us. Just look at us. Let's talk.
Let's talk on Levy, right? And I want to come to you, IAS, right? Let's talk on Levy, because we need to talk about the second player that's been linked to Spurs, Pedro Porro. And we're in the same group chat where our fellow brother Ranty keeps posting Pedro Porro news like almost every other minute. And you keep saying, chill, the deal's going to get done. But let's talk, because we need to understand why. Why does Ranty have to post those links for the player constantly? Why does he feel on edge about a player that seemingly looks like it's a done deal for Spurs, potentially not signing for Spurs? Can you elaborate, please, IAS? Because, one, I want you to give your thoughts on Pedro Porro as a signing, and two, I want you to give your thoughts on why Spurs fans are generally anxious when it comes to transfers.
Yeah, I think, like, look, obviously, I've been, like, I wouldn't say an ardent defender, but I've spoken.
I would say an ardent defender.
I've defended the Enoch Premiership in many ways, because I think that they've evolved the club in ways that I think have been outstanding. But I admit that there is a deficiency in terms of footballing knowledge, and they've never really, like solved that. For two reasons, really. I think for a lack of desire to kind of cede control. I think when they did cede control in the early like phase of Pochettino and Mitchell, that obviously ended in disaster. And they've tried to kind of retrieve back that control. This sort of Paratici relationship seems to be like a fairly interesting one. I don't know what that's kind of based on, but there must be, in terms of the chain of command, I'm sure, you know, everybody knows Paratici's on the phone all of the time. I'm sure he's literally telling Daniel Levy everything he's doing, every penny he spends, every time he goes to Tesco for a meal deal, has he got the receipt? I think they don't joke with that. But I guess as an extension of that kind of attitude has been, I guess, this penny pinching over the years. And what has probably, you know, another byproduct of that maybe is complacency, or like a an attitude probably around Europe where people don't quite enjoy negotiating with Spurs. And even if you haven't negotiated with Spurs before, their reputation precedes them. So when Spurs come to the table, it's like, ah, these guys, cool. Like, they're not taking us for a ride. We're going to give them just as much as we're probably going to get. So I don't think Spurs have very good relationships around the globe in terms of like doing deals. You know, 10 or 12 years ago, I remember like Tottenham and Madrid entered into a special relationship.
Partnership.
And literally. But, and I think even that ended in on a sour note. Because I think, I remember also, is it Ola at Lyon saying that like he's never dealt with anybody like Daniel Levy before. It was the worst negotiation he's ever been involved in. And everybody else around Europe hates Ola at Lyon. So if he's saying that about Levy, you know, God save us all. So basically, to cut a long story short, all of those various different elements combined to make Spurs a club who have notoriously, as a result of that, ended up fumbling a lot of transfers because of complacency, because of probably like leaving a bad taste in people's mouths, you know, being told it's 20 mil and saying, I'll give you 10.5 plus add-ons that amount to 19.9 mil. Like, just taking the absolute liberties to preserve Joe Lewis's war chest that he's got in the Bahamas somewhere. And that is why, because of that like trauma of seeing Willian get hijacked, literally everything's done and Willian's hijacked, or seeing other deals like even potentially Sergio Aguero in 2010 not go through, or like
Oscar was another hijack.
There you go. Yeah,
we actually had Oscar done, and just, yeah, said stop that.
Various transfers like have just gone to shits, that is why I guess Ranti has been so obsessive about trying to make sure that he's got some sort of skyscanner view on where Porro is at and like who he's talking to and if Chelsea are trying to tap. It's also a sensitive time in the Premier League because Ted Bowley has been preying Fabrizio Romano tweets and scouring and say, who's this guy? Who's this Pedro Porro guy? I think we should put in a bid for him. I heard tonight that that Ted Bowley's interested in Moses Caicedo now. Like, that Arsenal bid 60 million for him. Fabrizio Romano's tweeted hours later that Chelsea are in for him. So it's a sensitive time. I can understand why Ranti is concerned, because if Chelsea hear anything, they can swipe. So yeah, I guess to conclude on that, with this Porro deal, I think the other thing that makes it really important to people like Ranti and obviously to Spurs fans alike is that at this moment in time, the fullback position is in hell. Toby's notoriously called it the Bermuda Triangle, because it like go to the right.
the ball don't come back.
Everything disappears there. It's one of the best times I've ever heard in my life. So that position is like desperately needs to be filled. And he looks like a competent player. I'll be honest, even though I am IAS, I haven't developed a comprehensive scouting report on this kid.
Is that right?
It's not comprehensive. You know, it takes weeks to develop a comprehensive. I've been busy scouting other players, but I've heard promising things. I've also heard that he can sometimes be inconsistent. I think under a coach who wants to attack, though, he can be really good. And I think my concern with Conte is the proactive approach. I'm not really a massive fan of 2022-23 version of Antonio Conte. That's not to say that he's not been a phenomenal coach. I'm just not convinced that his approach now is a style that players want to you know, our want to kind of take on or adopt on the pitch and feel their best selves sitting back, you know, for large swathes of a game or not pressing and not being, you know, the front footed. I worry that that's operating against him. But yeah, Porro obviously seems like someone that could significantly upgrade that position. He looks mega talented. So here's to hoping it works out well. I kind of wrote off Danjuma. Initially, I called him a Bournemouth legend.
you say Aston Villa level or something like that?
Yeah, like he seems to be like...
He's a good player, man. He's a good player.
Do you know what? Like he as much as he's a Bournemouth legend and a deputy to Steven Bergwijn, I did see him destroy Diogo Dalot. Like he was all over Dalot in that Champions League game last year.
Both games.
So that's the only thing that I'm kind of hanging my hat on to. If he can consistently produce performances like that, then Spurs might have actually done something quite clever here. And obviously the 6-month deal, there's not much to lose. Son needs competition. Son needs a kick up the arse. So yeah, those two deals, you know, nobody held much hope for Bentancur and Kulusevski this time last year either. It was kind of just like, here's to hoping that they do well. But I don't think anybody was like, well, let me not say anybody. I can see Yao's like, you know, positioning himself as the new IAS, but I don't think anybody thought that they would become, I don't think many people thought that they would become as successful as they've been so far. So that, you know, who knows? We could see a similar bit of fortune with Danjuma and Porro.
So to add on to that, especially with Ben and Kulu, I knew were young enough in terms of their age and the profile that they brought, but I knew that what they had, because they had both been less Kulu, more Ben, but they had both been in Juventus title winning teams, and Ben had been quite vocal in at least one of those teams. He was like, you know, one of their like standout midfielders. So I knew we were getting competent players, and all it took was for me to see both of them play in their first two or three games to be like, yeah, I'm very comfortable with what they would bring to Spurs. And if they can have this as their base and improve on that, then I was more than happy with it. It was, I can't remember the exact game, but I remember there was a match. I want to say it was Southampton. I want to say it's the Southampton game where we lost 3-2, but we were leading 2-1. Ben came off the bench and I messaged in the group immediately. The first person I went after was Toby. I said, look at this guy's touch. Yeah. He, in 10 minutes on the ball, in the pitch, had done more than Højbjerg has done in his entire life. That guy's useless. He's a useless, useless man. Yeah. Absolutely useless. And so I was competent with those two. I was confident with those two purchases. In this regard, Danjuma. Listen, outside of his Villarreal games in the Champions League, I haven't seen anything else from him because I haven't bothered to watch, you know, Villarreal.
He was playing for Bournemouth.
He was quite active for Bournemouth. He was quite active.
I heard he was active. But, I remember the game against United and he did give the hell. Yeah, but the game that made me think he might be decent, you know, was against Juve. I was more impressed about his performance against Juve, the kind of hell he gave them. I was like, all right, yeah, cool. All right, this might be decent. Because Son, ladies and gentlemen, no longer plays football. That guy's retired. Yeah. We just have a hologram playing on the left side of our team. That guy is not a human body. That is a computer-generated AI. Because there's no way you can tell me, yeah, that Danjuma alone is coming to Spurs to sit on the bench to a guy who's... Listen, ladies and gentlemen, go and rewatch the North London Derby. Yeah? You might not see me where I'm sitting in the crowd, but there is a touch in that first half that Son did that led to me leaving my seat and heading out of the stadium. I knew it was down.
I'm gonna have to.
Is it the one that went out for a throw-in?
Oh my god! Listen, nothing made sense as to why he did this. The touch was bad. I was like, nah,
but you know what, Yao? Yeah, sorry. I just wanna come in quickly. Yeah, like the way that Son is being treated by some Spurs fans that I'm observing, like yourself, I think is just horrendous. Like this guy is a legendary Spurs player, you know. Like,
that's nice. 100%.
This is his first bad season ever at the club, and his first bad season, everyone's like, this guy's got to go. He's arse. He's trash. Get him out. Listen, like, that is the sentiment amongst his detractors. And
the more you get to know me and Andre. Take a look at his face, because it's one of the greatest faces in your life. Yeah. The more you get to know me, the better it'll be for you. I want greatness. I do not scrimp on notoriety of non-entities. My own children don't have the audacity to look at me and do nonsense. One time, I'll send you to your bed immediately. Yeah. My oldest son had never kicked the ball for 12 years of his life. Turned to me and said, Dad, I want to kick ball. I looked him square in his face and said, if you can't give me 10 kick-ups, do not ask me to kick football ever again. This boy went and trained for a whole week. The following week, I saw him do 20 kick-ups in a row. And I said, you know what? I'll take you to a team. That's what I demand. I demand greatness, yeah? You can't give me nonsense for 6 months and think I'm going to forget it, because that, my friend, is the equivalent of every single Nigerian person walking the face of this earth, even the ones slapping me across my face. Yeah, every single day. And that cannot run, because as Toby and Tops can tell you right now, as much as I love my Nigerian people, they are Amala warriors, and they cannot look at me and tell me what to do about West Africa. Now, I'm digressing. Let me swing right back to my whole point, yeah? Danjuma, I've seen enough in terms of what he's done for Villarreal. I'm like, he better come. I want punishments in this club. I need players that are too comfortable to feel like, yo, my livelihood is at stake here. I need to turn up. If this was the most ideal situation for me, the most ideal situation for me would have been Spurs get Porro, only because that's what we're going after. Not to say he's crap, but we get Porro, Danjuma, and we go and get a keeper. And we drop Lloris. We drop Son. And we completely send Emerson and Doherty on graffiti watch. And we just use those three. Because for me, it is important that these players that have coasted into our team, Dyer, obviously, Højbjerg, Davis. Højbjerg's different, but Davis and Dyer, they weren't starters. They were squad players. Now they're out-and-out starters. We have an opportunity to kind of eradicate that and let them know, you guys are not starter quality. You're just not. We give you 4, 5, 6 game runs, and you let us down 4 or 5 out of those games. You can't run. Son, unfortunately, and this is so sad because it's only 6 months removed of the back end of last season, which was great because the first part of last season wasn't too good. But the difference was he chipped in with goals. That was the part that kind of eradicated his overall performances the first half of last season. Second half of last season, the performances were up there. The goals were skyrocketing. He gets top goal scorer. I don't know what's happened this season. Honestly, I don't know if he went, back home and his father just berated him for the whole summer. I don't know what happened, but when this season kicked off, he ain't been the same. But there is one thing, and I have said it in the group. There is one thing I have said in the group that I don't think a lot of our fans, and I don't think a lot of other fans from other clubs have taken note of what's going on at Spurs. Outside of the Daniel Levy and the Joe Lewis's not spending money because they're scrimpers. But we've had a coach that's lost his life, who was extremely close to Antonio Conte and extremely close to the club. And yeah, I feel like the players are probably still dealing with that, if I'm being honest with you, as well as Conte. And then Viali passing away recently is also a close friend of Conte. I feel like this might be the last season for Conte, if I'm being honest with you. Regardless of wherever we finish, I think he might like call it a day and say, you know what, I'm going to, you know, just relax for a few years and just take some time off. And that's fine. But if that's the case, that means every single one of these purchases that we're making in January and possibly in the summer are for the new coach. Because I don't see Conte staying on past this season. And if I'm being honest with you, is Porro considered a Conte signing? Because if it's not, and it's a club signing, I hope Porro doesn't get treated like the last club signing that's about to be sold or sent out on loan in Jed Spence.
I feel like with Jed, he's definitely not going to get sold. I think it's clear now. It wasn't clear to me in the summer, but I think it's clear now that he was a club signing and they're not just going to let him go. But I feel like Pedro Porro, simply because of his playing style and his experience, even though it's not a top five league, it's still a top flight league, I think Conte is going to use him. I feel like Conte is going to use him, and I expect him to start. Listen, the window, I guess we're not going to do ratings now. It probably makes more sense to let the window close, see what else Spurs can do between now and next Tuesday. People are saying someone's mic is bugging. Is it my mic? Can you not hear me clearly? You can hear me clearly, right? Is it me?
Yeah, it's settled now. It's settled now.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, I think it's settled now.
Okay, shit. Sorry, my bad. Yeah, okay, cool. I feel like, listen, wait until the end of the window to assess, right? But Pedro Porro looks like he can tick a couple of boxes that we need. Danjuma remains to be seen. Guys, quickly, I'm going to wrap up and get just quick thoughts on the FA Cup on Sunday. I think we play Preston away.
Yeah.
I'm going to go around and ask for your score predictions and just like a quick 1 minute spiel on why you've gone for that scoreline. So, and what you expect to see in the game. I'm going to start with you, Booker T.
It's going to be difficult. It's going to be a Preston. That's Deepdale. So it's not a great place to play away from home. They actually have a pretty raucous home crowd. But I think because we got a game a week away, which is Sunday against Man City, I think we'll actually go full strength. And I expect if we do go full strength, I'm only hearing that Kane might be sick, and I imagine Danjuma is probably going to play some portion. So I'm just going to go Spurs win 2-0.
IAS.
Yeah, I think it will be a tough game. I kind of echo many of the thoughts that Booker T had. And I see after a tough game, a calm victory for Preston. Like, I see a calm 2-0 for Preston. Like, I genuinely believe that Preston will defeat Spurs and go through to the next round. They're a championship side, and I think they're 11th in the championship. To me, it just strikes me as one of those horrible kind of circumstances where everything just goes horribly wrong. And Conte will invariably be in a press conference the next day saying, I can't perform magic. And he plays like the club needs to show ambition or some other riddle that he has. And Preston will go on to the next round. Like, that's genuinely what I believe is going to happen. If not, though, if it isn't that, then I think Spurs will have, like, it will be like a 1-0. Like, I just don't see it being like a thumping. Like, I see Preston being in the game, creating chances, like causing stress, like actual stress.
They're definitely,
I just think that's where Spurs are at now as a club. I think every game is just really tough now. Like, every game is an absolute battle.
So, yeah. Stockholm.
So what, the last few times I've predicted a Spurs defeat, or I said that Spurs were going to lose every single game for the last, 4 weeks, and we've won one game. Jesus Christ. We're going to Preston. Yeah, the weather's not good right now. Yeah, there's probably going to be a lot of wind around them areas still.
Because the weather in London's good.
Yeah, it's just bad. It's just bad, you know. Them Preston fans are going to be saying, Preston! 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 Yeah, no. You know what? Yeah, Spurs are going to lose this one, you know. I can see I'm with Kane on this. I echo the same thoughts of Booker T. We'll probably try a little bit, but I think it's going to be an ugly 0-0 60th minute. One of their players. I don't know a single Preston player, so I'm just going to use a random name, James.
Well, listen, Liam Delap, yeah.
George Parrott's actually there on loan as well.
Liam Delap is, and this is from IAS, a player.
Man City's academy player, yeah.
Oh, the Man City kid.
Yeah, he is a player. He is a player. Okay.
So, all right, cool. So now that I know that, yeah, we're gonna. I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm just gonna be nice. We're gonna win 3-1.
Okay.
I don't know what the situation is with him though, but he's a player.
Andre, let's finish off with you. What are you going for?
I just feel like there's always this cup game where we go to penalties. So I'm gonna say that we're gonna win this one. I'm looking forward to the lineup and seeing who he's gonna put on that team sheet. Obviously I'm hoping he's going to line up a strong team to show us that he really wants to go far in that competition, in that tournament. So we'll see. But I mean, I can't say that we would draw, go to penalties or lose. I'd see us win 100%.
Yeah, if we draw it, it'll be the replay, innit? And then after the replay, if we draw it, then it could go extra time and pens.
Jesus. But we can't afford a replay.
I think I'm going to listen. I completely hear Kane and Scott Hall. Like, I genuinely see this as a game that Spurs could lose. We lost to Middlesbrough last year, but I feel like too much mud has been slung by this team in recent weeks, and they actually have to start taking shit seriously now. And I feel like just because of the sheer importance of winning, when it comes to a manager like Conte, you have to take this seriously. So I feel like if we play a strong team, we should get a result. So I'm going to go for a 2-1 win to Spurs, man. I'm going to go for a 2-1 win to Spurs. But guys, thank you for giving us your time on the pod. It's been a very interesting podcast. Lots of chat on Kane, Conte, the transfer window, etc., etc. For those who are still watching, thank you for tuning in. Thanks for the comments. For those who are listening on the audio, make sure to subscribe and follow New Spurs Order, one word, across all socials. And make sure to follow Touchline Fracker on all socials. Until then, take care, peace out, and up the Spurs.
On debut, Tunde Ondombele has scored the equaliser for Spurs. Lucas Moura clips it. Oh, great goal! Stephen Bergwijn has arrived in North London! That is absolutely incredible on debut! Aurier!
Sports Social Podcast Network.